following interview is with Joan Pretty, Executive Director of Project SAVE. The interview took place on April 25th, 2018, at the Sloppy Floyd Building in downtown Atlanta. Project SAVE is a nonprofit in Athens, Georgia that works to end domestic violence through supportive services. Joan discusses her background, the genesis of Project SAVE, and how they've worked with Georgia Tech on a crisis intervention text line for teens and young adults. So the following interview is being conducted as a part of Georgia Institute of Technology's Everyday Georgia Interview Project. Today is April 25th, 2018. The interview is taking place at the Sloppy Floyd Building, which has proved to be quite challenging. The interviewer is Allison Volk, and if you could state your name?
Joan Pretty.
Okay, great. Thank you for participating in the project. Maybe you could just start out by just talking about your background, maybe what brought you to Georgia, how you got started in your career, that kind of thing.
Sure. So I was raised in Louisville, Kentucky, and what brought me to Georgia actually was law school and a growing panic. I had sent my deposit, was all set to go to George Washington University. I was going to do a dual degree, international studies, that had been my major undergraduate, and law. And I just began to have this growing sense of doom about how much I was needing to borrow after my assistantship and scholarships, and how expensive it would be to live in Washington. And I wasn't sure exactly what I wanted to do, but I knew it was going to involve poor people. Mm-hmm. And just was thinking that was not a good fit. And so I started looking for alternatives. And, you know, if you plotted in terms of law school, good on one axis and cheap on the other, Georgia graphs very well. And
gotcha.
So I came down here sight unseen, and I fell in love with Athens, and then I fell in love with my partner, and what, 28 years later.
Nice. So what are your interests and hobbies? In addition, obviously, you know, you're very involved in this organization. Is there anything that you do sort of outside of work that sort of really enriches you?
Right. So it feels sometimes like my interests and hobbies are Project SAVE and intimate partner violence.
Yeah.
But honestly, in a town like Athens, teaching can be a hobby. And I teach part-time at the university, mainly classes in fundraising and grant proposal writing. And I really enjoy doing that. I would teach for free. They have to pay me to grade. But other than that, I love travel. We are headed very soon to the Galapagos Islands and Ecuador, and then later on this year to South Africa. So I'm very good at unplugging from work and going to very interesting places. So we've been able to go around the world, and I love that. So long anticipated and planned for. We also do a lot of dog rescue, and the last, I would say, 8-9 years, we've been focusing mainly on pit bulls.
Oh, cool.
And so we have three now, and just adore them. And,
oh, very nice.
And are just, you know, like crazy, stupid pit bull moms. but yeah, we love that, and I love cheering on the Georgia Bulldogs.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, I have other interests that these are my deferred hobbies. I have visions of later on when I maybe am pulling back from career some, then I love to cook. I love photography. I love being outside and in nature. And
yeah.
So those are the, you know, I've got a vision for a garden and a...
Nature is so enriching. I have a vegetable garden, and I find it's a form of therapy.
Absolutely. Oh, it's wonderful. And it... Just being outside, and we're very fortunate in Athens to be able to live quite close to downtown, but still have a nice size yard and lots of mature trees and that sort of thing. And well, I read an article, and it talked about ecotherapy, and it took me a minute, but it's like, oh yeah, that's going outside.
Yeah. Novel idea. So, you know, who would think?
Right. It's like we've really fancied it up. But it's basically, you know, if you spend time outside and look at green things and look at trees, your mood will improve. And it's like,
it's
so
true.
It's kind of like what Mom always said.
Exactly. Georgia's such a great state for that, too.
Mm-hmm,
There's like
absolutely.
So many hiking opportunities and things like that.
Well, I think that's one of the things I love especially about Athens is the proximity to the... you're an hour away from the tip of the mountains there and just an hour and a half from the big city and four from the ocean. So,
it's lots
of variety, easy to get to.
Pleases everyone. So, can you describe a significant person or event that influenced who you are today? And it can be a person, an event, a situation, just anything you'd like to share with anyone.
Sure. I think it's hard to pick a single person or a concise anecdote about influential people, but I think in terms of event, and certainly in terms of my career, it was being asked as a very young attorney in the wake of the passage of Georgia's Family Violence Act. It was being asked by my boss to look into the situation of survivors of domestic violence imprisoned in Georgia for killing their abusive partners, and to prepare clemency petitions for those individuals. And I was already doing post-conviction relief work representing indigent inmates in the state, and I hadn't really thought about domestic violence. It came up from time to time. I represented men who had killed their wives or girlfriends, but I hadn't thought of it. It hadn't really affected my life in any meaningful way. And that project became, over time, this almost second full-time job in terms of a pro bono project, and we worked on it for many years. And it's what opened my eyes up to the issue. It's what led me ultimately to come then lead Project SAFE and the work we've done there, and ultimately the work on the text line to deal with dating violence. But I think if you had asked me what are your issues that you're interested in, the top 20, the top 50, dating violence, domestic violence would not have made the list. But once I got in there and I saw the need and I saw that match between something I could do to help remedy an injustice, that was very inspiring and very exciting. And to be able to have that match of skills and need come together, I think that's an incredible thing. And so that was certainly something that just opened wide all the doors and windows in terms of the direction of my career.
Right, the dominoes just started falling.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. Well, can you describe how you initially became involved with Georgia Tech and the research that sort of how it, the synergies
right.
there?
Right, so I've been at the helm of Project SAFE since 1999, and our mission is working to end domestic violence in a variety of ways, and so we've been exploring and adding on to kind of the menu, I guess, of services and programs that was initially on offer, and trying to find new things and always kind of on the lookout for what are the trends. And so in 2012, the CDC had published a report about dating violence. And in it, Georgia was named number one in the country. And I just remember reading this article, and the ranking was based on incidents or prevalence as much as they could determine, because it's underreported like everything else we deal with.
Sure.
But also in terms of lack of resources addressing it, lack of any programs or services, and that our laws and policies here are not designed with teens in mind. And that just got the conversation going with us at Project SAFE. And here we are in a college town, not just UGA, but other universities are located there, plus all of the high schools around. And we realized that we weren't really hearing from very many young people, what I would consider kind of the hot zone of say, 14 to 24, that age range. And we don't ask people when they call the hotline how old they are, that sort of thing, but just, you know, and we weren't hearing, and we kept thinking about how we could try to do that, and so we were working on getting into the schools more, but we were also thinking about ways that this age group communicates, and it's texting rather than
right.
calling.
It
and
is.
So we were thinking about we need to create a path, and texting makes sense. So we started our text line, and initially It was copied after just our internal on-call system where we take turns being responsible for after-hours
right.
emergencies just on our cell phones.
Yeah.
We started really just passing around a cell phone. And we utilized our interns. We gave them special training to respond to texts. And initially it was okay. We weren't getting very many texts and it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
As the text line started to take off, though, and get utilized more, we ran into both the just inconvenience of the handoff,
yeah.
but also the unevenness of the distribution of the texts,
right.
that one person wouldn't get very many in her week, and then the next intern would have it the week we had a presentation at a high school or something and would just
right.
be drowning. So one of our former board members, who at the time was on our board of directors, is Margaret Dahl, and she is there at Georgia Tech, and she was the one who pointed us to the Institute for People in Technology mm-hmm. and thought that there could be some sort of software solution to what we were dealing with. And so through her, I met Jeremy, and we began talking and thinking about what could be done, and he's the one that created the SafeLine software, the system that we use. And so the beauty of it is that it allows our interns to log in from any of their own mobile device and then receive texts that are distributed by the server. And when they receive the text, it's assigned a case number,
mm-hmm.
So they don't actually see the name or the telephone number
keeps
of the
anonymous.
Individual, so it keeps
nice.
It anonymous. And that way, too, as we know all young people tend to do, they give their passwords to their roommate or their boyfriend or girlfriend, or
right.
they, you know, share phones, and we don't want them to be able to see identifying
yeah,
information
yeah.
from someone else. And so it has just made it convenient. It's been scalable. It's allowed us to process just a greater number
yeah.
of texts. It also allows our manager, so we have a couple of part-time folks who are on staff who schedule the text line and also monitor it for quality control. They can mm-hmm. hop into a text conversation if it's getting
right.
Just intense or complicated.
There's a channel for intervention there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it just gives us a lot of tools to deal with the project. And so we launched December of 2012. I wish I could remember exactly when we got started with Georgia Tech. It was a couple of years in.
Yeah.
So I feel like it was maybe 2015?
Could have been that. Yeah,
14 or 15?
Yeah.
We then were able to, by about a year ago, about March of 2017, we were able to go statewide mm-hmm. with the text line and so offer it across the
That's
state,
amazing.
Advertise it that way, and continue to offer it as a resource.
Very nice. I really liked the feature when I was reading about it, where any one person doesn't get overburdened. That's kind of, you know,
exactly.
and this particular field,
and
like
so,
that would be very important.
Like a lot of things we do at Project Safe, we're trying to approach our issue from a lot of different ways, a lot of different perspectives, and so there's certainly the service component of providing the outlet
yeah.
for particularly a teen or a young person to be able to confidentially
yeah.
ask questions
Absolutely.
About their relationship and figure stuff out.
Yeah.
But what we're also doing with our interns who sign up for this is giving them a chance
mm-hmm.
to have an even deeper experience as an intern,
yeah.
to act as this really smart, very well-trained big brother or big sister.
That makes sense.
Looking out for someone. It also gives them the practical experience, the practice, most of them are social work majors, not all of them, of what it's like to be on call,
yeah.
of what it's like to not be at your designated place of work, but still have work to do.
Right, right.
Right, so that they have those experiences too of
yeah.
being the helpful person, being
yeah.
the sounding board or the provider of that information. And so the text line allows that to happen in a way that's manageable. And it has an auto response initially that says, thanks
right.
for contacting us,
a
volunteer will be with
response,
you shortly.
Yes.
So they get an immediate response that also
yeah.
indicates that a live person
yeah.
is going to be
yeah.
popping in just a second. And that way, if the student's in class, they can slip out real quick and just
mm-hmm.
say, hey, I'm in class, I'll be done in 45 minutes, and then I'll text you back. Or
gotcha.
So that they don't have to drop everything they're doing.
Right,
they can
right.
still carry out their lives. But it just is the perfect marriage of technology, but still a human touch.
Yeah. I'd imagine it's a really great growth experience for the people participating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, not all the students like it. They don't always like that aspect of being on call, and we say, well, then this is a good learning opportunity for you, that you realize that maybe that's not the sort of job you'll want to have in the future. But so many of social work or health or law enforcement or any kinds of those things require it. So this is a safe place to do it.
So how have your interactions with these technologies or research initiatives affected your work or personal life? Or has it sort of made you think about, other issues on a larger scale?
I think one aspect, and it's not so much technology, I'll move to that, but certainly that we've always known is how important connection and relationships are.
Mm-hmm.
And that when we run up against something that's hard, or when we're faced with a barrier or a challenge, if we only try to think about it ourselves, whether that's individually or in a closed group as an organization, with what we know how to do, we're going to be limited in what we can do.
Oh, very true.
And so in this specific instance, it was about finding a technology solution that for someone like Jeremy is not hard.
Right.
But for someone like us, it's totally out of bounds for what we can do.
Right.
And so it's that connection, and that came through Margaret, our board member, but that connection, but sort of the openness to say, we're puzzling over this and we don't know how to do it, and who knows someone maybe who can. And I think I think about that on lots of levels in lots of ways. I certainly think of it from a as a Christian, from a religious standpoint, that if I think about what I have to do rather than thinking about my faith and belief in God, that again, that's limiting for me. If I think of it as it's my responsibility.
Right.
But when we think about, again, individually, organizationally, as a single community, you have to be open to say, I don't know how to do this, but I bet somebody does.
That is so important. I think it's so important not to work, whatever you're in silos.
And to be open that it's not a failing to say, I've identified something that I don't know how to fix.
And the importance of collaboration.
Exactly. And I think that's been one of the rewarding things where I think for us we're like, oh, this is so cool. But I think for the students that helped Jeremy create this, and for him too, he has said that it's been very gratifying for him to think of the very real and personal ways.
Yeah.
And as a father of daughters, particularly, although we hear from guys too on the text line, and I think that's maybe reduced some of the stigma that a boy would have with questions about his own relationship and whether he's being treated well or not. I think the quality of the text line and that it's not so obvious right away opens that door.
So is there any other ways you envision technology might benefit or impact your work or everyday life in general in the future?
Oh, I imagine so. I just don't know what...
There's always something coming around.
I don't know quite what it will be exactly, but I'm sure that there will be. It's interesting, and I'm going on a tangent now, but I'm slated to teach my classes at the University of Georgia online next year for the first time. And in fact, I'm working on creating my fundraising class online. And I'm really struggling with it because I feel like a lot of the aspects about teaching that I really enjoy are the very personal interactions with the students that I have in class that
different.
I'm wondering how I might have them online. Mm. And so I'm trying to do it with an open heart. I'm also, sort of lamenting that it's not going to be
It
as
does.
Good.
It takes a real important piece out of it.
And so it's interesting that I think, like many of us, I have sort of that love-hate relationship with a lot of aspects of technology that it certainly makes our lives better and easier in many ways, and then in other ways, perhaps a little less so. We've certainly seen in our movement, it's easy for us to focus on the ways that technology has made it easier for abusers to harm their victims. Using technology to stalk, to monitor,
good
intimidate
point.
People has just... We can't keep up with all of the ways that people can be terrorized through technology. And that is very frightening. And so I think for a lot of us in this movement, that kind of tempers sort of how we view technology.
That's a good point.
I'm not sure we've found as many ways to use it the other way, you know, to play offense on our team with it. I'm not sure we've opened up as many doors with that quite as abusers have figured out how to use it to harm their victims. But I think we just keep on exploring. And I think we're so fortunate at Project Safe to be in a university town, even though we did come over to Atlanta to work with Georgia Tech for this project. But I think the more, too, that we can inspire and encourage students who are pursuing careers in technology to understand the ways that it can help people beyond just, oh, this is cool, this is a thing that does something
beyond
new,
games.
More efficiently, more... Right, that if we can encourage people to get involved, to join the boards of organizations that are working on issues that they care about, to volunteer for those organizations, and then they can be the one that has the light bulb over their head about, I bet I know a way that we could make this work better for you. Or I think that would be a wonderful way then to discover the things we can't imagine quite yet.
Right. Thank you. So I guess just to sort of wrap up and conclude, are there any further experiences or anything you'd like to share related to this project? Something that's, I guess, made an impact on you or anything that stands out that you think is worth sharing?
I feel like we're still in the early phase, even though we've been doing this now for about 5 years, because it took us a while to create the design and then to find Georgia Tech and then to launch. And so I feel like we're really at the kind of the jumping off place now,
right.
where we're beginning to get more recognition across the state. We're beginning to have more organizations trust that this is a real thing and share the number with young people when they encounter. And so I'm very excited for what's coming up next over the next 2 years to see it getting utilized even more. And I'm excited for the scalability possibilities that we have, that we might not, who knows, maybe in my teaching I will fall in love with online teaching and learning, and maybe we will start partnering and recruiting interns from Georgia Tech or from Georgia Southern or other places and train them and have them be answering and make it more regionalized or localized even.
Right.
Who knows? So I think there's lots of cool things on the horizon, and I'm excited to keep moving forward. I hope Jeremy's not going anywhere, and I hope we'll deepen our relationship with other folks at IPAT.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Joan.
Thank you.